you'd think he's not going to get to it. He's not going to get to it, and he would.
Joe DiMaggio was like that.
Was he?
A different level.
And Blair, you could tell, you could tell the ball is coming down there. He's going to get to that one. But Willie, he caught so many balls that it didn't look like he was going to catch. It was unbelievable.
Who would you say was the best all-around ball player you ever played against? Probably two or three.
Against or with?
Yeah.
I got to put Allen in there. Defensively, he was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, he was outstanding. Except for Roy White's arm, I would say he had to rank above, up with. Consistently, year in, year out.
Yeah, I think he's in the Yankee organization again, I think.
Yeah.
Who are the toughest pitchers for you? Two or three of the toughest pitchers?
Well,
you mentioned Catfish Hunter.
I think Hunter, we got to put him on that list.
All right.
He was probably one of the toughest. Another guy that I hated to face but did well against was Jim Perry.
Gaylord's brother.
Gaylord's brother.
Right.
He short-armed the ball, and you couldn't see the ball, and he just kept hitting my bat.
Mm-hmm.
And I did well against him. Gaylord, I didn't like to face.
Wet when the ball came up?
He threw that port ball at you, and it would drop from your hat bill to a one-hop to the catcher. Let's see, who else was tough?
About Seaver, yeah.
Seaver, I faced. He kept the ball down and moving, and he was tough. And what was his name? The Cubs right-hander.
Jenkins?
Ferguson Jenkins.
Yeah.
I did get a few clutch hits off of Fergie, but didn't like facing him.
And you mentioned Jim Palmer, one of the great pitchers.
Jim,
you handling?
I think this was before he really came up with a good curveball.
Oh, I see.
And I always hit him pretty well. I was a fastball hitter,
uh-huh.
And he didn't go up the ladder like Hunter did. He kept the ball a little more down.
Anybody else you did well against?
Didn't really play that much really do that well against. That many pitchers.
Okay. Let's get on and talk about now the Dodgers, that season is over, and how this thing with Japan came to be.
Well, as I said before, I asked the Dodgers to release me, and
this is the end of 1976.
76.
Right.
And they did, and I didn't know exactly what I was going to do at the time,
mm-hmm.
but I was released, and I was deciding whether to try to go back into baseball or go into business on my own or what. And Gail Hopkins, a friend of mine, played with Kansas City and Chicago, called me and said, "Would you like to go to Japan?" And I spoke it over with my wife and said, Yeah. My wife loves baseball and loves to travel, so she said, "Let's go."
If you don't mind asking, what was your last salary in the major league?
My last salary, when I went from the Expos,
mm-hmm.
The last year I was making $25,000 a year.
What was your high point in salary? Is that the high point?
That was my high point.
And what did what was the offer from Japan?
And the Japanese offered me, $55,000 a year to come over there.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, we'll go over for a year and try it.
Mm-hmm.
7 years later, I finally retired.
Okay. And remember your first impressions?
If you've seen Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck,
yeah, right.
that movie's pretty much, except for the manager and the way he changed and the at the end towards Selleck, that movie's pretty much true.
Which team were you playing with?
I played with Hiroshima for 6 years and the Nankai Hawks in Osaka.
Okay. Were there any other Americans on the team?
There was two Americans on each team.
So who was the other one with you?
Adrian Garrett, okay. Wayne Garrett's brother.
Wayne Garrett from the Mets, right, okay. And what kind of reception did you get from the other players?
When you first go over there, they sit back. They all speak a little bit of English. Mm-hmm. They just sit back and wait and see what you're going to do and how you're going to be. So the first year, they don't talk to you very much. They're sizing you up.
Yeah.
And then after that, I became really good friends with a lot of the ball players. They play a different game over there. They try to throw a lot of surprises in.
Such as?
They'll hit and run with home run hitters in situations where you need a home run. They'll steal a guy that hasn't stolen a base in 3 or 4 years. They'll bunt in a situation where you should be swinging away. They'll swing away in bunt situations. All the time, you know.
This was all of the teams, or just your?
Oh, all the teams.
All the teams were there.
The managers over there manage to, if they're not winning, they manage to keep their job to satisfy the fans. They play, a lot of their strategy and their teachings are, haven't advanced since Babe Ruth went over there, because they're a land of tradition. So these are things that most ball players would get upset with when they would go over. I did too, but finally,
The relationship between players and managers compared with the States?
It's a different thing over there. The managers think that they manage with divine inspiration, and the players give them that respect.
It comes out of their culture, I guess.
Their culture with a pecking order this and that and the other. The older players, the younger players, the coaches, everybody's in a pecking order. And if anybody that's above you in that pecking order tells you something, you do it.
Right.
So the manager's at the top, so whatever, you do it. And so it's a very interesting situation. It is tough. When you first go over
there. As an American.
As an American, and seeing some of the things that you do. Some of the things that are done over there are...
How about the relationship with the umpires, players and umpires, managers and umpires?
Players and umpires...
As compared with here.
When I was there, some of the Japanese players kicked, knocked down, beat up the umpires. The managers did the same thing. It was like, you can't do this. And finally,
what happened? They were kicked out of the game? Or what?
Sometimes they were, sometimes they weren't.
Really?
It was amazing what happened. And,
wow. That sort of goes out of step with the, you know, authority. You know, here the umpire is the chief authority.
Yeah, yeah. Over there they're
That's
not.
That's sort of strange, know. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the umpires over there are not that good either.
Uh-huh.
The umpire that sits behind the home plate is always about, in the States you see him looking right over the catcher's shoulder.
Yeah.
Over there they'll be 2 or 3 feet behind the catcher and duck down behind the catcher. They can't see home plate.
Really?
So as a result, anything that starts out at the plate is a strike, and it breaks, you know, so the strike zone is huge. And so that's a point of disagreement over there, especially with a lot of the Americans.
Yeah.
The Japanese accept it. The Americans don't. I mean, the strike zone will be a foot inside and out.
Yeah, right.
With some of the umpires, you can't be looking outside and hit a foot outside and hit a ball a foot inside. So that makes it kind of tough.
So how did you do that first year?
First year, they told me that if I hit 300 and hit 20 home runs, and they told Adrian Garrett if he hits 280 and hits 30 home runs, that we'll win the pennant.
Okay.
Well, I hit 301 and hit 19 home runs. Adrian hit 38 home runs and hit 270 something. We finished last. They blamed the season on us.
But you did your part.
We did what they.
How could they do that?
What they? Well,
yeah, yeah,
you know,
okay.
They
got to blame somebody, right? Yeah,
yeah. We don't understand what they're saying or
right.
doing anyway.
What, a lack of pitching.
We had all young pitchers.
Right.
The second year I was there, we set every offensive record in Japan. And home runs, we hit more home runs than anybody had ever hit. I think I hit 33 that year. Adrian hit 40. Our center fielder hit 44. Our third baseman hit 30. Our first baseman hit 27. We had 200 and some home runs in a 130-game schedule.
Where'd you finish?
We finished a distant second that year.
Yeah, right, okay.
And then the next 2 years we won.
Got the pitching there.
And we got the pitching. Yeah. Our pitchers had aged. We had some good arms.
Okay.
Our pitchers had aged. We traded for a real good relief pitcher.
Okay.
And the next 2 years we won everything.
How about the fans as compared with the States?
The fans over there are loyal, and they follow you whether you're winning and losing. Like over here, you know, you fill the stadium up when you're winning. When you're losing,
yeah.
Over there, they follow you, win or lose.
What kind of crowds? 30,000, 40,000?
Our stadium, my first year over there, had remodeled it to seat 35,000, I think up from 30.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority, I'd say the first half of the season, we averaged around 30,000, and we were in last place.
How about people asking for autographs, things like that? Is that...
When I was in Japan, I signed with permanent markers, car hoods, suit coats, front doors of people's houses. I signed everything and anything. You name it, I signed
really?
It. Roofs of taxi cabs inside on the ceiling, and but they're big autographs.
You didn't encounter any particular anti-Americanism? I mean, this is
only
like
twice.
30 years after the war,
right? Yeah. Only twice in the 7 years I was in Japan. It was two separate instances with
an older person, maybe.
One guy was a homeless person.
Yeah,
in Nagoya. And the other was just an older person that was a little senile, and that was the only two instances.
Okay, what about the level of competition, the pitching, for example?
I would compare their competition over there when I was there to Triple-A baseball.
Okay.
A lot of it had to do with, again, going back to when Babe Ruth went over there. They taught the infielders to get in front of everything, which, as you know, you teach young guys that, but at a point in your career, you teach people how to backhand the ball.
Uh-huh.
And they wouldn't backhand the ball unless it was something that they were
on the dead run for. Front of everything. Uh-huh.
They were trying to get in front of a lot of balls that went by them just to the right, the infielders were, that they could have easily just one-step crossover and fielded. That and you know, several other things I can't think of right now.
You said
now.
You learned really how to hit the curveball in Japan. Was that just because you played every day at this point?
I played every day when I was over there.
You think that's what made the difference?
Well, what happened was spring training, I went over there, and my first at bat, I was a little late getting started over there because of my visa, and so I came late in spring training, which was still early for the States.
Yeah.
And we started playing games. The team had already played about five or six games. The first game I played in, I hit a home run, my first at bat.
Oh.
The next day, I hit another home run. And the next day, I hit another home run.
Uh-huh.
So now they're saying I'm going to hit 70 home runs.
Right.
Well, they were all three fastballs. What they do when you first go to Japan is they see if you can hit the fastball.
Okay.
Said, okay. And Gale Hopkins...
Well, how did that compare with the majors? When you first started in the majors?
Well, they've got a scouting report on you.
They
know what you can
do. So they didn't really have a scouting report.
They don't really have a scouting report on you when you go over there.
Uh-huh.
So Gale Hopkins, the fellow that helped get me over there, called me and wanted to know if I wanted to come over, was on a different team at the time, and he says, you've got it made now. He said, all you're going to see for as long as you're in Japan is curveball
right,
and curveball. So So I went through spring training, and they kept throwing me fastballs until about the last week of spring training. And I hit like 5 home runs, I think, through the spring training, which was only about 12 games that I played, 13 games. The last couple of games I played, it was curveball, curveball, curveball.
They're getting ready for the season.
And they're seeing if I can hit the curveball.
Right.
Well, I'm up there cutting and slashing and hacking, and Hopkins says, perfect. Now they think you can't hit it. So I have been there for 7 years, and anytime it came to a situation where they had to get me out, they threw a curveball to me.
And you knew it.
And I knew it. And was swinging for the fences.
What did you do, just to wait on it longer, or just adjust it then?
I adjusted, and they didn't have the speed over there. Majority of the pitchers didn't. That, you know, like the pitchers here, that can sneak the fastball by you.
Right.
With over there, when they're throwing you the curveball, it's hard for them. You can fight it off or hit it the opposite field pretty easy. So I could still sit there and look for the curveball and the forkball.
Right.
And
so actually, you reached your peak as a hitter in Japan, actually.
I think I did.
Yeah. Interesting. What was life like off the field for you while in Japan?
Well, we had to learn Japanese over there.
Mm-hmm.
So the family took classes at the local YMCA. There was a YMCA. And my kids learned to speak Japanese fluently. It was very difficult. There was only like 20 foreign people in Hiroshima.
Yeah.
It's not like Tokyo. And there was only 10 of those 20 were American.
Right.
So everywhere I went, everybody knew who I was in Hiroshima. And so it was
a lot of autograph requests.
And
what kind of housing did you have?
We had a 3-bedroom apartment that was probably about 500 square feet.
Among other things, Jim then went on to discuss the frustrations of trying to instruct Japanese in the American strategy of playing baseball.
They score the tying run,
right?
But the winning run doesn't score.
Right.
And Japanese style. And okay. So the next day, ditto. The exact same.
Second and third?
Second and third, second inning, same hitter, same everything.
Really?
This time he hits a 102 hopper up the middle. Run scores, they beat us 3-2.
Unbelievable.
I went to Tanaka and I said, Tanaka, what is going on? And he's...
Went to Tanaka again the second time.
So I go to Tanaka and he says, Japanese style. Well, from that point on, I never spoke to them again about how they play.
And this is probably why you were told
to
play, right.
I would go back to the room, we'd be on the road, and Adrian Garrett and I were rooming together. We'd go back to the room and just, you know, can you believe this, can you believe that? But on the field, we didn't, you know, we just went out and played.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, they started calling me Uncle Jim. They said I was very smart. You know, this is over another year or two where I just...
Was that the other players?
Well, the press,
players, okay.
Everybody thought that I was really smart. But
you were just conveying your experience, right.
You know, there wasn't anything I could do about it anyway.
Okay.
All the screaming and hollering that you wanted to do.
How would you compare the press with the American press?
Well, the press dictates a lot of what goes on over there, more so than here. You know, you'll get a bad name in the press over here for doing this or that or the other. But if the press over there wants to, you know, push or sway the fans, they do over there very easily.
Well,
because what the press says is law.
Why?
Japanese way.
Okay, I guess it's a cultural thing. What was your last year there?
83.
Okay.
I went to... 82 season, Hiroshima went to a youth movement. They released me They released our first baseman. They got rid of Inatsu, our relief pitcher.
Right.
Our first baseman.
You were 37.
36.
Yeah, 36. Yeah. Yeah.
Our first baseman went to the other league and led the league in hitting. Mm-hmm. Inatsu went to the other league and led the league in pitching, you know, relief and saves. And I went to the Nankai Hawks, who were the worst team in the league. And there was, I was the only American on the team, and I told them at mid-season that I was going to retire at the end of the season, and so they just kind of kept me around.
You felt your skills were beginning to erode, or you were just getting tired? Or?
I was getting tired. My son was a senior in high, was going to be a senior in high school.
Right.
I hadn't seen him play football. I hadn't seen him do this and that, so I wanted... So they.
You mean they were, the family stayed back in the States?
No, the family came over, but I told them that, you know, I was going to retire at the end of the year. It was going to be my last year.
No, you said you hadn't seen him play football.
Well, I was here. He would come home and play football.
Oh, I see.
But,
you
know,
you
would
send him
home
early.
A little bit early.
Okay.
And play.
Yeah.
So they just, they kind of kept me around. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, you know, well, you know, we want you to stay. I said, well, I'm not retiring now. They said, well, you know, we want you to stay the rest of the year and help out some of the younger guys. So I played a little bit for the rest of the year, and in September they told me to go on home. So I got to go home and see my son play football. So that was my last year. We had a terrible team over there in Nankai.
For those years in Japan, do you remember what your overall average was?
I don't remember overall what it was.
Were we hitting 280, 300?
Yeah, probably around 290 or something.
Okay, and getting
my
the
overall
home
average.
Runs. Were you getting 20 home runs a year?
I think I averaged 23 home runs a year. I had a couple years where I hit 33. I had 2 years where I hit 33 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
I was leading the league in RBIs one of those seasons, going into the last month of the year, and or the last couple of weeks. They don't want you to, at that time, they didn't want Americans to win any titles, because the Americans came home and to the States. The Japanese toured, if you won a team title, you toured the state or prefecture. If you won a league title, you toured all of Japan. The team made money and you made money.
Oh, I see.
So they didn't want the Americans to win, and they would actually take you out of the game to keep you from winning. Your strike zone would grow immensely.
What if it were like meant the pennant or something?
Well,
that might be a little
That might be a little different.
Yeah, right.
But the 1 year when I took over the lead, the RBI lead, the next game we went into Nagoya to play, and I came up the first at-bat at the plate. I came up, our shortstop who could fly was on second base.
Mm-hmm.
I hit the ball about 4 inches from going out in right center. There was no question of whether it was a hit or not. The question was it going over the fence?
Uh-huh.
And it just hit right at the top of the wall, bounced back in. I rounded second to go to third. And he's standing on third base looking at me with his arms crossed.
My God.
And he came up to me after the game. I knew what was going on. I'd been there long enough to know, you know, to know. And he came up to me after the game because he was a real close friend of mine. He used to come over to the house and eat all the time. And he said, Jim-san, I'm very sorry. I said, Yoshi, I know. You don't have to tell me.
He was told to do this.
Our center fielder was the guy that was leading the league until I passed him. And he came and told me, he said, Koji, our center fielder, said if I ever scored on a hit again, that he was going to punch me out. So the pecking order, again, our shortstop was a young kid, our center fielder was my age. So there's nothing he could do.
Yeah.
And if he wanted to play, you know, he couldn't score. So I was going to third for a triple. He can't score from second base on a triple, right?
That is absurd.
So it's just, that's the way it
was. So how did you feel emotionally, you know, this was your last year? You ready? you were ready to quit playing?
I was ready to retire, yeah.
Right, okay.
I had, my knees were hurting, my okay. ankles were hurting. Mm-hmm. I last couple of years I played over there. I had bone spurs in my right knee from injuries here in the States, and it was pain. So I was ready to hang
on. Did you ever wonder, what do you think if that injury hadn't taken place and you could play regular in the majors? You think how do you think you would have? No.
Well, it didn't really bother me that much here in the States. The mm-hmm. injury didn't.
You had to sit out, and then was it Bloomberg or who came up?
Oh, with the appendectomy.
Yeah, right.
You always got to wonder what would have happened.
Uh-huh.
This is the hand that's dealt you, so you play it.
Right.
And I never regretted it.
Right. Would you mind telling us a little bit about what you've done since when you came back to the States and up to now?
During the off seasons when I played here in the States, when I lived here in Florida, I worked outdoors in landscaping
mm-hmm.
and took up a profession. I bought a nursery when I retired from Japan, and for the last 11 years, that's what I've been doing, is growing plants here in South Florida.
Did you learn some of this when you were farming?
But like I said, I went to work when I first moved here to mm-hmm. South Florida. Working for a landscaper, so I learned the South Florida plants and things
mm-hmm.
at that time. So I kind of learned the business then, and I decided that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that for 10 years, and I've also coached high school basketball for a couple of years here. I coached American Legion baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I coached college baseball over at Lynn University,
mm-hmm.
Which was a college of Boca Raton, a small NAIA school.
Right.
For 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and so I've done a little bit of everything. I really enjoyed the coaching and would like to get back into it someday.
Great.
On the college level.
Would you care to comment? No, nothing required about the situation with the baseball strike there.
Well, being an owner of my own business, I mm-hmm. can see where the owners are coming from. Being a player, I can see where the players are coming from. But I think, you know, if everybody would lay all their cards on the table
right.
and put all the numbers down and say, okay, mm-hmm. this is what the owners are making,
right.
this is what the players are making, you know, a profit sharing or something, you know, something
right.
can be worked out.
Right.
But I think if, you know, they're going to have to lay all their cards on the table, which when we struck in 72, that's what we were trying to do.
Right.
The owners were crying poor mouth. The players were wanting a little more money. We were
mm-hmm.
making not much at the time. And then Charlie Finley came out and said, well, if I make 700, or if I draw 600,000 people, I make $1 million.
Right.
You know, so that, you know, who knows? I don't know what the numbers are.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing. Are you involved with baseball at all right now?
In baseball, no. I do play some softball games
mm-hmm.
With some of the retired players
right.
around here
mm-hmm.
for charity and that sort of
okay.
thing. You know, busy with my family. And my last one just graduated from high school. She was a swimmer. And
that's great.
She's up at the University of Florida. I went to FSU, so there's
a little rivalry
that's there.
But
she was a swimmer in high school, so we were very involved with that.
If there's anything looking back that if you were able to do it over again, anything you would do differently?
Well, I think I'd have my dad make me a switch hitter instead of a left-handed hitter.
Okay, I think that's what Mickey Mantle's part of it.
Right. Other than that, possibly I would have stayed in school another year or two in college just because of, I don't think I was actually ready to, you know, mature-wise to go into professional baseball at the time.
You mean emotionally?
Emotionally, maturity and things. I don't think I was quite ready to jump into pro ball.
Mm-hmm.
Other than those two things, I do everything the same.
Well, I can say honestly, you have a beautiful, we're speaking of Jim's landscape, but a beautiful piece of land out here In the country, Jim looks like he's in really good shape, and I'm really pleased. And I just want to say it's been really a pleasure talking to you. And once again, I'd like to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.